Welcome back to Coast to Coast. And, well, we're going to get into, I think, a pretty exciting area of discussion, the lost secrets of ancient America. I traveled the world for 3 years because I wanted to find the mysterious places. I wanted to explore the phenomenon that surrounds them. And I realized that I had to go a great distance. I had to travel far off into the Middle East, into India, to Africa. But I was wrong, because America, as it turns out, North America, is teeming with mysterious places, archaeological sites, megalithic structures that, well, rewrite history as we know it. And our guest for the next several hours, Josh Reeves, has a documentary that points out a lot of them, the lost secrets of ancient America. And this is going to be a wild ride. So if you're listening to us live, hold it right there. And maybe you're listening, who knows, by a podcast. If you aren't, well, you probably should. You should become a Coast Insider. It's only 15 cents a day. And you can listen anytime that you want. So we're going to dive right into this just after the break. Welcome back to Coast AM. Our guest is Josh Reeves. He is a Texas-based researcher. And he delves into areas of corporate government corruptions, the occult, esoteric philosophies, mass media propaganda, social engineering, hidden technologies, and ancient mysteries. I'm fascinated. Josh, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me tonight, Rob. And it's an honor to be on with you. And I think with you being a fellow researcher like myself, I think we're going to definitely have a very interesting show tonight.
Yeah, you have done everything that I wanted to do, because there is so many anomalous structures and sites of ancient origin right here in the United States. I think people would be stunned to know about. How did you get into all this?
Well, it started from my interest in this thing called the Rock Wall in Rockwall, Texas, here just on the outskirts of Dallas. And that's where it started for me. I really, before that, had no interest in ancient mysteries at all. As you mentioned, I was more into researching conspiracies and UFOs, Bermuda Triangle stuff. And then about 10 years ago, I was reading Jim Marr's book, Rule by Secrecy, and I came across mention of this rock wall. And after having, you know, different experiences like UFO sightings and missing time events near the area of the town of Rockwall, it really immediately just set off red flags to me. And something told me deep inside that this was it. This was somehow connected to all of that. And I made it my mission, even though then I didn't even have a radio show or wasn't making films or anything. I just made it my mission to uncover this thing. And here I am 10 years later, and I feel like we're actually finally really starting to make some progress.
Yeah. Now, let's start off with this rock wall, because this was something that I didn't know about. And it's absolutely amazing. I mean, here is this wall that's buried under the ground in Texas, and it kind of defies all explanation. Give people the background on this.
Yeah, it really is quite astounding. It just from the very beginning of it, because when it was first discovered in the late 1800s, the locals were trying to dig water wells. It really started as innocuously as that. And as they were trying to dig water wells, they kept hitting stone. Now there is no naturally occurring stone geologically in this area whatsoever. So they knew it had to be from somewhere. And as they started finding it, they realized that it was something more than just natural rock. So they called in some of the local guys who founded the town. At that time, the town didn't have a name, and once they determined that this was obviously built by someone, the local Freemasons came down and noticed the stonework and the buttering of the stones with this strange crystalline material. They knew immediately this was the work of master stonemasons. So at that point, that's when they decided to name the town Rockwall, and there's been lots of various investigations through the years, some that have yielded results as the rock wall being a natural formation. A lot of this has been on based on flawed data, because they didn't have accurate mapping back when some of this stuff was done. They certainly didn't have LIDAR and some of the things that are available to us today, which no one's still done out there. But there has been some mapping that was done over the course of 2 years by hand, determining this thing is a 20-mile diameter wall that's leveled at 550 feet above sea level. It's a crystalline material wall that's made up of primarily zircon and garnet are the two main materials, but it's also comprised of not only zircon and garnet, but starlight, titanite, and brookite, niobium, which we use to reinforce steel pipes and jet engines, things of that nature. So there was definitely a lot of things when I first started reading about this thing and hearing about this wall that immediately made me say, okay, there's something more to this than just it being a natural formation. You have things like a buttressing effect built in, which is a very, very interesting engineering skill where it can actually handle live loads, large amounts of weight being on top of it for long periods of time. It also produces a piezoelectrical energy field. And as I stated, there's been numerous UFO sightings around this area for many, many years. So this was really the thing for me. I wanted to know, well, okay, if this is indeed some unnatural formation, then what else was found here? What else was found in this area? And has anything like this or anything similar to this been found elsewhere in the United States? And that's what really led me on to finding out about all these other mini sites that I'm continuing to document and go out and look into.
Right. I mean, it's amazing. Okay. How long is this wall?
It's 20 miles total in diameter. I believe it goes roughly six miles. West. What direction is that? Oh, I'm sorry. It goes south to west, roughly about 6 miles. And then on the other side, it's about 4.5 miles or so wide. And it encompasses a 20-mile diameter area. It encompasses really the entire town of Rockwall.
That's stunning. And how deep is it?
Just shy of 100 feet. It goes down about 7 stories or so. No one's really ever gone down to the very bottom, but they do know that the farther down you go, not only do the stones get larger, they also get older.
Unbelievable.
Very interesting.
Well, that's a massive feat of engineering.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
especially when you find things like shark's teeth embedded in the outside of it, and again, this buttressing and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a massive feat.
Yeah. And so the strata that it's in, the depth in the ground, where does that put it in the timeline? Because I know they can sort of gauge how deep you go to how far back you go.
Yeah, and it's another one of the strange sort of murky things about this, because how old that material should be that you have to break through to get to it, which is a blue shale material, is said to be, in some cases, millions of years old. But the soil analysis on the rock wall says conclusively that it was covered in a catastrophic event somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 to 12,000 years ago. Something happened that pushed all this overburden and stuff up from the Gulf of Mexico on top of it, and that can be found by things like, as I mentioned before, sand dollars. They found sand dollars and they did excavations that were not petrified. They still had fresh meat in them. They were compacted down in this seawater, and they were preserved for years and years and years because nothing had gotten to them. And when people started excavating the wall, they started to find these. So it's apparent that this was some sort of seawall probably as well. The dating on it puts it somewhere in the range of 200 to 220,000 years. And that's interesting because it ties in with, as we'll talk, I'm sure, more about later, ties in with a lot of these dating of these pre-diluvial, pre-flood cities being erected all across the earth.
This is just stunning. I mean, people listening to this are thinking, how can that possibly be? How can a wall that deep, that big, that long be excavated and this not be, major news? I mean, this kind of upsets all the known timelines of this kind of construction. I mean, there's no guess even what kind of civilization or who was responsible for it, right?
No, not really. I mean, there are some guesses. I think that's really all it is. One of the things that's a key piece of evidence is something called the Sander Stone, which they found that had some strange hieroglyphics that matched a coin identically to a coin that was found in a soil strata in Illinois that dated to 220,000 years. And these hieroglyphs are identical to the symbols you see on the Sander Stone. People can see this in my documentary as well. And they started finding out that, okay, the dating on the rock wall says somewhere 200 to 220,000 years. That's also what this coin strata was found in. And we start to go, okay, well, who could that possibly be? And as I've found in my research, you keep going back and back and farther back in time, and all of these various connections keep going back to even prior to ancient Sumerian, Babylon, and all those cultures. We're talking even farther back than that. So that's when we start getting into this idea of this being somehow pre-diluvial, pre-flood cities, and things of that nature. But yes, there's really no idea who built this thing because the engineering skills are beyond anything we could do today. I've had people look at the mineralogy of this thing, and several geologists have told me you couldn't construct those bricks in Earth's current atmosphere. The molecular structure of having all these component minerals have their molecular structures stay independent in situ. You would think if you mix them together, they would bond. They don't somehow on the rock wall. So they're formed and created by some engineering process that we are not even close to figuring out yet.
Yeah. And just to be clear, this is a wall that was constructed. All right. We're talking about rocks on rocks. It's just not a natural phenomenon whatsoever, right?
We have cast stones. These stones are individually cast with a makeup and a mineralogy that does not occur naturally. Things like tourmaline. Tourmaline does not occur naturally at all unless it forms on the outside of a quartz crystal matrix. But inside of the rocks themselves, the wall, there absolutely is no quartz. Now, there is material that grows on quartz, such as tourmaline, rutile, starlight, those type of things. But what's interesting is between the cast stones themselves, we see where all of this quartz that they would have had to have left over after extracting all these other minerals, we see where that went. The mortar substance that the stones are glued together with is what they call a geopolymer. This is made of three different types of quartz crystals brought together from different locations and then mixed into a kind of butter, and they're perfectly buttered like a stonemason would do, and they seal it together. When this material is exposed to air, it actually becomes very, very resilient, airtight, and waterproof. So this thing was built to last. The materials that this thing was built out of were built to last a very long time, much longer than anything we'd be able to capable of doing, because a lot of these minerals that comprise this 20-mile diameter wall are very precious, semi-precious, rare. I mean, we would take centuries to extract that much for us today.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is something obviously that is astounding. Is there any official archaeological digs done by the University of Chicago or any other university?
No, not this time. There have been several attempts by the Smithsonian, who sent people back in the 1920s. What they were looking at was a classic stone dike, sandstone dike in the area. It wasn't even the rock wall, but back then, again, as I mentioned, they didn't even have mapping. So there have, as of yet, been no universities that have come forward and wanted to do an investigation of this, because they're still coming from this original 1923 summation from the Smithsonian Institute, which has become the basically the law on the rock wall. That's what everybody accepts. So
okay,
it's up to individuals like, you know, myself and other people out there to try and find the truth of this.
And what was the quote-unquote official story by the Smithsonian?
That it is a natural sandstone clastic dike.
Well, you think they could have done a little bit better, don't you?
Well, you'd think, considering that we now know the location, because we have we were able to get the maps from the city of Rockwall. They have, it's all available there. You can go to their little historical foundation, and they'll give you the maps and show you where the Smithsonian conducted their dig at. Well, when you go and take the publicly available map that John Lindsay made of the wall, and you pull that up into Google Earth, you can see for yourself that where they did their analysis at was not even on the wall itself, but was inside of the wall, meaning not actually a part of the wall proper. They were examining something that was probably a natural construct or something like that, but because they didn't have mapping back then, that was the formulation that has stood to this day, and no one's questioned it. No one's even tried to scientifically question it, but I think that that's what we're on the road to do. I want to have an independent archaeological dig there and document all this stuff from the piezoelectrical stuff to the makeup, get it all on video, get it all on film and present it to people, because you can tell people something all day long, but you have to show them if you're ever going to change people's thinking on something and really change the popular opinion that's been held since 1923.
Yeah. No, it should be a UNESCO World Heritage Site, but
absolutely.
Now it's just they're just trying to cover it up. Well, you know, of course, this stone wall runs under a lot of people's homes, I would imagine, and county properties. Is there anybody that could allow permission to dig this up that would?
You know, I don't know if there are any yet that would. I'm hoping that I'll be able to find some. But what's interesting, Rob, is that, you know, there are places where, of course, they have built on top of this thing. But I started noticing, after getting much more accurate mapping in Google Earth, I started noticing how interesting it was how many of the spots and locations of the wall have been preserved. For instance, you'll have a huge subdivision of houses, and right where there's an outcropping of this wall at, they just stopped building houses and just made it a field and left it intact and everybody that goes there just thinks it's, you know, a field with some trees or something. They don't think there's anything interesting there at all. But lo and behold, when you look at these places, they all line up directly on the map with some of these locations. There's one interesting location, one corner piece of the wall that comes right in the back of a corner of a local steakhouse there. And I was having dinner there one night, and I happened to look over where we were dining, and they had two stones, two giant stones from the rock wall sitting in this area of the restaurant. And I'd been in there many times before that, never noticed it. And I started talking with the waiters and telling them, you know, that thing comes right to the back door of this thing. And, you know, it just made me wonder, did the people that build that know that or not? It just seems very interesting that no one could see me to give me a good answer on it. But a lot of people don't want to talk about this thing. And I think you nailed it. It's that whole, well, in the beginning, people didn't want to give up their farmland. They were afraid that the government would come in and take their farmland away. And now, since the real estate value has gone through the roof out there, it's all being zoned for high value retail spots. So they're charging up to $1 million for some of this property. And there's some out there right now that's available for that price that has mounds and all kinds of stuff on it that I found. It's just unbelievable.
Well, that's the other part of it too. Isn't Rockwall County one of the richest counties in Texas?
Absolutely it is. Yeah. I think it's second only to like Southlake now, but it was number one for quite some time. And yes, there's many, many big wigs and people. You have people like Congressman Ralph Hall who lives out there. So absolutely there is. Yes.
Okay. Tell us about the History Channel program that investigated the rock wall.
Well, this was interesting because I heard about this last year and it just immediately said, wow, you know, I had people sending me emails saying they had contacted the History Channel and they didn't seem interested. And then about a couple of weeks after Lost Secrets of Ancient America Volume 1 came out, they were all of a sudden very interested and they started putting together their own show. And they were in Rockwall for a week and they said they were going to present the end-all, be-all explanation on the wall in 1 week. And I started thinking, I'd like to know how they're going to do this in a week when I was told by the guy who excavated the last one that, you know, it took months and months just to break through the blue shale to get to the layers where the wall is. So somehow they were going to do this in a week, and then they came out with a story and said they had some sophisticated digging equipment they were going to do it with. And then later on it came out that they were actually not even doing a new excavation. They were just going to pull the dirt off the old excavation and show that. And that's indeed what they did. But the long and the short of it, I really explain this more in my newest film, Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 2. But the long and the short of it is they did not include the mineralogical data of the rock wall. They gave us, the only example they gave us of testing material at all was some stones, which they said came from a 1976 dig, which really could have came from anywhere. They didn't do any stone testing at the wall when they actually pulled the dirt off of it and excavated it. You would think they would have done the testing there, but instead they did it on some stones that were said to be taken from the wall, but you know, nobody really knows if they came from it. When they did the test, he came back and said that the stone was limestone, and there's never been any reports ever of limestone ever being in these bricks at all. People can go to my website, beagleborealty.com, and there's a link up there that says Bud Shelton's Geological Report. It's a free download. People can download that, and they can go to page 8, and clearly in page 8, it says there that because there's so much of the quartz mineral in the wall structure in between the mortar of the rocks themselves, that you cannot accurately paleomagnetic date this wall because quartz is always going to show a uniform paleomagnetic resonance. And that was the basis of their whole argument. They, at the end of the show, claimed that the rock wall was natural based on paleomagnetic data they performed that indicated that the magnetic resonance signature of the wall all flowed in a uniform direction. If it was man-made, it was supposed to be random. Well, according to the geological report that was put out by a geologist in 1999 by the name of Bud Shelton, who, by the way, doesn't believe the wall is man-made at all. He believes it's natural. But in his report, he says beyond any shadow of a doubt, paleomagnetic data will always show that the wall has a uniform signature because of the quartz that's contained within it, and they did not bring that up on the show, and therefore their entire explanation of this thing is a complete hoax.
Hmm. Well, hold it right there, Josh. When we come back, we're going to talk about a lot more. Nephilim, red-haired giants, the Paiute Indians, and many more anomalous structures. We're talking with Josh Reeves about the lost secrets of ancient America. My name is Rob Simone. This is Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, thanks for coming back with us. We have an incredible show lined up for this Saturday night. And we're talking about the mysterious places in the United States, some of them literally right under your feet, as we were talking in the last half hour. If you missed it, just go become a Coast Insider, and you can listen to any show you like. Now, the idea that there are these sacred mounds and these megalithic structures that defy explanation is one thing, but as we progress this interview, we are going to step back at the end of it, and we're going to shed light on a commonality that links all these different sites in North America that point to an event that must have happened that has a significant impact on the human race as a whole. Our guest is Josh Reeves, and he is someone who has been exploring the mysterious places in the United States for quite some time. His latest documentary is called The Lost Secrets of Ancient America. And we're going to talk about, well, the Ohio Valley, the underground levels. We're going to talk about the mysterious mounds and the strange astronomical significance of these structures that, well, mainstream archaeology just doesn't want to acknowledge. We're going to get right into that right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking about the mysterious places in the United States, and our guest is Josh Reeves. Now, Josh, there are, of course, a lot of mysterious places. The Rock Wall certainly is one of them. What stands out in your mind as another one that really, there's no question about the fact that it points to a history of not only this country, but mankind that hasn't been acknowledged yet?
Well, there are a few, but I think that really, gosh, that's a very hard one, because a lot of them are acknowledged, but it's not that they're not acknowledged and not that they're not known about, but I think that the perspective that's being shown in a lot of these places is not indicative of the real truth that you find when you research them on your own. So I think that a site like Cahokia in Illinois, which is a massive, massive site, we went there for the latest installment of the film, and I mean, we couldn't even get close to documenting and filming all of the sites that were there, including the Monk's Mound site, which, you know, it's just amazing that this isn't taught in schools. We actually have a site in America that is bigger in its footprint than the Great Pyramid at Giza, and also bigger in its footprint than the Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan in Mexico. And this massive site, while it's astounding and, you know, thousands of years old, and all the other giant mounds around it are astounding, and the fact that you can still go up to the top of it to this day and see downtown St. Louis from the top of this thing, what's even more astounding, Rob, is the fact that when there was some excavations done on this site back in the 1990s, they started to find rock. And just like I discussed earlier in Rock Wall, there is no naturally occurring rock or stone in the area of Cahokia, meaning it would had to have been brought in by someone from some other source. So they started doing testing on this and doing various ground sensing technologies and stuff, and looking under ground penetrating radar, etc. And what they started to find out was that there was a whole system of these rocks that seemed to be joined together, and they surmised that it may have been a massive stone pyramid even thousands of years prior to the Cahokia mounds being built there. Now, this is something that, yes, it's very true for Cahokia, but you see it represented throughout a lot of these ancient sites. They were ancient sites long ago, and then someone built stuff on top of them yet again, and we start to see our modern cities being constructed in much the same way. Thomas Jefferson, who was considered to be the first archaeologist in America, who was first excavating these mounds on his own property, actually discovered this and built the city grid system of Alexandria, Virginia, along the lines that some of these ancient mound sites were built along. And we start to see this model represented in Washington, D.C., and in places such as Indianapolis, Indiana. So we have a real, very interesting precedent for there being ancient civilizations on top of what we would consider an ancient civilization, a mound site or a megalithic structure that's maybe 2,000 years old. We call that ancient. What we don't realize is in many of these cases underneath it, there are much older structures. And that's what's interesting, again, as about the rock walls we talked about earlier, is that the age of it and the fact that it has things like these solstice alignments and equinox alignments, much as we find in virtually every site in America, from the Serpent Mound to any other mound site you can name, we start to see that even though this thing was built much, much earlier than a lot of these mound sites, they still were built with the same sort of engineering mindset, and almost as if they were being built by a playbook of some kind. So it's very interesting to see that what we term an old civilization may possibly be even older than we perceive. And I think that's been one of the major things that's been covered up in all this, Rob.
Yeah. Well, no, you sort of hit right on the head there. This happens over and over again. I mean, I lived in England, and the churches would build their, the Church of England would build their church on the standing stones that the pagans would put to mark the ley lines. So this idea of building on top of sacred places is something that's been going on forever. But this establishment, this Chokia, you mentioned, it was one of the biggest, 15,000 residents at one point, and they all vanished around 720 AD. Tell us about that.
Well, that's one of the, again, one of the common themes, and that's why I started researching any of these sites in the beginning, Rob, was, again, looking for commonality that we see across the different sites. And that was one of the ones that stuck out undoubtedly between a place like Moundville in Alabama or Cahokia in Illinois or Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. There's just on and on. The list goes on and on. And we document quite a few of these in my new film.
The Cahokia
and what
is...
we see conclusively in every case is that these people just vanish.
Yeah.
They spend, in some cases, hundreds of years building these structures. And it always seems to be right when the structures are completed that they completely vanish. And when you look at some of these alignments and you look at the iconography that is found in the artifacts of some of these sites, like the eye and the hand motif that you see both in Alabama at Moundville and also at Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. Now, according to the Smithsonian, you know, these cultures should not share anything or have anything similar, but they all seem to have this same iconography that relates to these certain star alignments to things like Cygnus and also the Deneb star system. We see a lot of these alignments that line up exactly in all these different sites and seem to somehow pertain to a special event that only occurs during a certain window of time. And the speculation is that either, you know, a wormhole or a stargate or something opens, and either people can come in through it or something can come out of it into this realm. But it always, at all of these sites, seems to be that there is iconography of spirals, strange beings, and then, of course, you know, stories of people just disappearing off the face of the earth without a trace. And in the case of Chaco Canyon, leaving all possessions behind as if there was some sort of, you know, massive, massive bad event that happened there. And they found many skeletons crushed between the walls there, indicating that something definitely went on, because the people who originally inhabited that area were agrarian people. They had no reason to build stone structures. And then literally overnight, these giant, massive buildings start popping up that have alignments, lunar alignments specifically, encoded into them that happen over, in some cases, up to 20-year timeline. Meaning someone would have had to have lived out there for almost 20 years before they ever built a single structure, just to be able to mark exactly into the stone structures where these alignments take place. It's fascinating.
It is. Well, let's take one at a time. Let's talk about Cahokia, because this was really one of the biggest ancient sites in North America, right?
Yes.
Okay. And at the time, there was 15,000 residents. Now, that in of itself is extraordinary, because they're baffled to understand how they sustained a city that big, right?
Yes, to have a city that could sustain a population at that time, you know, when you didn't have a perfected system of sanitation or how you would provide for food. I mean, there's really no explanation as to how they could have had it. Mm-hmm. And it literally came overnight. And yeah, some of the legends that surround this are just very interesting.
Yeah, well, let's tell people where Cahokia is right now. What's the biggest city it's near?
The biggest city it's near is St. Louis. It's actually located on the southern tip of the state of Illinois, right on the border of Missouri and Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And at what point was it at its height? When was it thriving?
Roughly, I think somewhere in the range of 1,500 to 2,000 years ago. It's kind of sketchy.
Yep. And what happened? Because there's an interesting evolution that this amazing city went through around 720 AD. Tell us about that.
Well, all the stories that we seem to find on this all talk about these robed beings, white-skinned robed beings coming down from the sky at a point in which the Cahokia civilization was at its worst. They were in fear of collapsing, and these robed gods appeared out of the sky, said that they could give them the ability to have a massive civilization if, in turn, 500 years from now, they would give back to these robed beings all of their children under the age of 16 and all of their gold and riches. And, of course, the story goes that 500 years later, they showed up to claim what was theirs. The people at that time just said, well, we don't know what you're talking about. You know, it was 500 years ago. We're not going to give you anything. And they put up a fight. And, of course, they called down more of their beings. There was a massive fight that went on. And then the legends talk about some kind of a super weapon that they learned how to build from the quote-unquote gods, whoever that may be.
And the
we
residents.
Have to kind of use this nomenclature when we're talking about this stuff, because
yeah.
You know, it's kind of general and vague. Gods can mean, well, you know, a whole variety of things. But they supposedly got this information from their gods to build a weapon that used frequencies to destroy the attacker.
So the residents of Cahokia,
yes,
in their initial visitation from these beings from the sky, somehow learned to make this weapon or direct their psychic powers.
Yeah, supposedly it was something of, you know, kind of a manifestation weapon or something. Some, you know, focusing a mass amount of people's psychic energy into one universal target. And apparently this was something that was more powerful than they had ever counted on. I don't think they probably tested this thing beforehand. And supposedly the story is that it was so powerful and let out such a shockwave that it wiped out not only the robed beings who were coming out of the sky, but wiped out the entire Cahokian civilization and all trace of them. And it's very interesting that when you go to this site, there's no mention of this whatsoever, but it's very apparent that some sort of cataclysm, something happened, and people were just gone immediately. So I don't know if that's the case in all of these sites, but specifically as we're talking about here with Cahokia, you have something where there is no plausible explanation where these people went, and there's also no plausible explanation as to where they got all this technology in the first place. But when we start to see patterns, and we start to see this in other sites, that makes us want to investigate more and see what else we find.
Well, you visited this Cahokia, you visited the museum, you visited the center where they have a reconstruction of what the city looked like, right?
Yes.
And it, from my eyes, looked like they had a few sort of step pyramids, very, very simple, like two or three level. But it looked like something that you would see in Mesoamerica.
That's right. That's right. And you saw that across the United States at many of these mound sites. You would see the king or the chief of the tribe, whoever it may be, and they would have on these sort of palisaded mound type of structures, sometimes a wooden structure or something else on top of that, and that would be the chief's quarters or something else. But yes, certainly at Cahokia, they had many of these that went on and on. It was indeed a step pyramid. It's been degraded and wasn't taken care of for a very long time. So now you can't really see the entire steps of it. But yes, it was very tall, very large. And at that time, there wasn't anything really close to it in terms of scale and size.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Now, do we know anything about what their culture was like? Did we have petroglyphs? Do we have any images of their deities? Did they do sort of sacrifices? Do we know anything like that?
We have seen some sacrifices that seem to happen during some of these celestial events, such as the equinox and the solstices and that kind of thing, but not really a lot. But one of the things that you do find is this Birdman character. And if you go to Cahokia and visit, and you go to the visitor center, the first thing you're going to see when you walk up is this image of what they call the Cahokia Birdman. And this Cahokia Birdman is also related to the Mayan deity Quetzalcoatl, It's very similar to other bird-type creatures that you see throughout cultures like Moundsville in Alabama. A lot of these Adena and Hopewell cultures, Mississippian cultures, all have this similar bird iconography. I saw that very plainly at Moundsville in Alabama as well. So, yes, they were finding these artifacts of the local deities and some other very strange objects, one of which I got a replica of at the museum there. It was called an anthropomorphic bug. That's what they called it. It's this strange creature.
Like a bug man.
Someone detailed and made this artifact out of. I mean, it doesn't look like anything that is, you know, not extinct in our current age. It was just very strange. And someone went through the trouble of making this effigy of this strange creature. So it makes you wonder if there were also creatures or something like that that existed during this time that were wiped out during this. It's just really speculation. But they had a massive pottery center there, and they were making pottery for various tribes, and their pottery has been found scattered throughout not only the United States but throughout the world. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned another place that is near and dear to my heart. It's 6,000 feet and goes back to 2900 BC, Chaco Canyon. And this is a place that really is mysterious. And it's a lot of it's off limits, isn't it?
Yeah, a whole lot of it is. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what drove you there? Because it's something that most people think, well, hey, it's been around. People know about it. But what's the untold story of Chaco Canyon?
Well, for me, it was just seeing it and seeing the similarities between the way the bricks are stacked there with rock wall. And something was just kind of an innate thing, I guess, you know, kind of a sixth sense type of thing that said, I need to check that out. So we went last year. And as you know, Rob, I mean, it's just treacherous getting out to that thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's really, it made me wonder, why they don't make this thing easy to get to at all. But once you get there, you're immediately blown away by just, I don't know. It's not only the structures themselves, but there's a vibe in that place. There's just something there that makes you feel a certain way while you're among the structures. I've never experienced anything like that. And so I really went just to look at the similarities to see if I could find anything that correlated to the rock wall to maybe give me an idea if whether or not these people who constructed this or gave the plan to the Chacoan people to construct these sites could have been the same people who had the plan to build the rock wall and et cetera, et cetera. So we went and we started filming all the sites and taking pictures, et cetera, and looking at everything. And I was just blown away by the, you know, the doors, how small they are and how they're connected by line of sight. There were just all these anomalies. So we get home and I really, you know, it was kind of like, okay, it was great to see. And that was really my reaction to it. But it wasn't until going through the pictures and realizing some of the things that we got close-ups of there, we actually found these iron rings that are inside some of the bricks at Chaco Canyon. Now, this immediately sent red flags for me because this almost exact similar phenomenon has been found inside the rock wall. And the iron rings that came from the rock wall are a smelted material that dates between 5 and 7,000 years old. It's smelted of iron, copper, aluminum, and tin. And as far as we know, no one was smelting metals that far back in history. And so to find that at Chaco Canyon, along with these same alignments and the same story, as we mentioned, of the people disappearing, which again, similarities that you start to see that go, wait a minute, these patterns can't be coincidence.
No, what do you mean? What do you mean that there was the metal inside the rock?
Yes.
How so?
Well, you can see it in my film, Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 2. The bricks of Chaco Canyon, there are some flat stone bricks, and embedded into the stone itself are these iron rings. And again, it's exactly like what has been found in the rock wall. There are iron rings that are embedded into the stone.
Now, and what purpose would have that served? Is the general thinking as far as a construction? Or, I mean, why would they do that? Is this a remnant of?
I don't know, Robbie. It really shocked me because it made me realize, wait a minute here. This is something I don't think anybody's gotten onto yet. I kind of mentioned that in the film. I don't think anybody's kind of figured this out yet. There's something very, very strange. But people can see it in this film.
Yeah, it is very shocking. Well, you know what? We're going to dive more into this and some of the other mysteries that you have uncovered. This is Coast to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, and more right after the break.